Hey, this is Kyle C. Mumford, the director of Jamie and Jonathan. You're listening to Handsome Timmy D Express.
Well, hello, dear reader. Hello, dear listener. Welcome to, holy cow, episode 31 of the Handsome Timmy D Express, which is a proud part of the Dan and Travis Show, an awesome podcast about awesome things you can find on iTunes, you can find on your podcast app, you can find all over the internet. Just Google Dan and Travis. We're also a proud part of the Chronic Rift, a series of podcasts that attempt to find the culture in pop culture. This and many, many other great podcasts are available at chronicrift.com. I want to thank everybody, as always, for retweeting, listening, downloading, especially last week's episode with Ramon Hamilton from Think 10 Media. If you haven't checked out the series, the whole, go check it out. It's intense. It'll make you think. It's an important drama. So please keep checking it out. Keep spreading the word. You know, when I started doing this, I knew I would interview a lot of industry professionals whom I had known and worked with. But over the past few weeks, it's been really just, I'm just really pleased and privileged to have been able to shine a spotlight on a bunch of independent filmmakers. And this episode's cool because I'm doing both of those things. For many years on many shows, I've worked with an extraordinarily talented editor, Stop Blushing. His name's Travis Rust, and he's teamed up with his wife, Stacey Gariseva, and they've recently made their first short together, and so they're going to tell us all about it, the process and of how it all came about. So welcome to The Express, Stacey and Travis.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Did I get your name right, Stacey?
You did. Okay. You did. You made a very delicate pause there, but you recovered perfectly.
I'd rather make a delicate pause than get it completely wrong. I will live.
No, it was perfect.
With the delicate pause. So now Synergy is available now. We have the link below, and you can Google Synergy as well. Tell us all about this movie and how it came about.
Well, it started, I would say, in late 2012 when we got the idea of this person who we at the time called Dr. Like, who would help people who are obsessed with social media kind of elevate their social media popularity and get more likes and followers and comments and all of those things that were just part of our online personas. You know, mm-hmm. We saw this kind of real escalation of the splitting of our real world identities and our online identities as a society, and how people are becoming more and more obsessed with, you know, how other people online were responding to the things they were talking about and posting and saying. And so just as a kind of idea for kind of like a parody, and we didn't know what form it would take at the time, we kind of just invented this character and that we called Dr. Like, and then we sort of put that aside for a bit. We did other things. We collaborated on some music together and, you know, did other creative endeavors. And then at some point within the last year, kind of picked up the idea again, shared it with a comedian friend of ours who is also actually in the film. His name is Greg Barris. He's a well-known New York and LA comedian with this kind of traveling show called Heart of Darkness, very popular, and he's been around for many, many years. And we shared the idea with him, and he responded really positively and saw something in there, and that kind of gave us that bit of a confidence boost.
Motivation.
And motivation to turn it into a story, a script. And started working on it, and it ended up becoming, you know, that original concept of this person who helps people elevate their likes, but it kind of morphed into something bigger and a little more detailed and became a story within a story within a story of this person who was now an infomercial salesman peddling this product called Like Sanity RX 3000, and our model was all of those infomercials that you see late at night for all these exercise programs like Insanity, and just a very like amped up personality who would sell this product, and that's basically how it grew.
Now, one of the interesting things about this, now there's some twists and turns in the story, so we're going to be careful with spoilers here. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I interests me about what you guys did is, and I will actually admit as myself as a writer, I found this challenge of, like, you know, I could write a 200-page script like that, but sometimes writing a 10-minute story is like, oh my God, really, really hard. And it's you guys sort of almost embraced the format and tackled something, one, that's really topical. This is a very 2015, almost 2016 even, film. Because social media is not going away. But there's also, like you said, there are a fair amount of, like, layers and a lot of things in there that can make you think.
Thanks a lot. That was the intention. You know, we just wanted to be a multi-dimensional piece. And it was our first cinematic collaboration and my first script. So I felt that the short film format was more achievable for us at the time and budget-wise as well, because we knew we could make this film for under $2,000. And that was our goal, to just make a cool story within the short film format that wouldn't cost us much.
And something that we knew we could finish.
Yes. Because
you know, a lot of people start features writing a script or even through the production of it, and they never finish it. So that was a main goal.
Yeah. We just wanted it to be something that we knew we could accomplish.
Now, Travis, being an editor, and Stacey, you've done a lot of writing. You've written books, nonfiction books. You write for a lot of columns. How would you describe yourself? You're a journalist, columnist, storyteller.
Yeah, I'm a journalist and an author. My background is in magazines, as an editor and a writer, and I've written about everything from music, pop culture, some fashion. I've written about books and dancers. I mean, pretty much anything within the arts and some current events as well. And I wrote a book about the history of Def Jam Records. So a lot of my background actually is in hip-hop writing.
But the point I'm kind of getting at is, I think sometimes in the world of screenwriting, because I've been dealing with screenwriting and scripts for far longer than I care to admit, we sometimes become prisoners of structure.
Mm.
And you guys, and Travis is an editor, and you, as somebody, this is your first script, and you know, and you're an editor as well. You're an editor of words, as you described.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So it sounds, and based upon watching the movie again, it sounds like, or it seems like, you guys didn't really pay that much attention to screenplay format and structure to your advantage. You know, you just sort of were like, "Hey, let's do what we need to do to tell the story we want to tell." And I think there's an important lesson in there for us screenwriters.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I definitely familiarize myself pretty deeply with the screenwriting format, and although I didn't study screenwriting academically speaking, I studied it on my own, and Travis is a film expert. He's worked on sets. He has a very strong film background, so he understands the structure. I think that we approached it, the whole thing, the whole package, we just kind of approached it from an angle of a certain surreality, sort of like Adult Swim. If you look at a lot of those Adult Swim shorts, they don't necessarily follow the structure either, but they give viewers a kind of a visceral experience and surprises. Yeah, and I think that was our goal, was just to sort of entertain and surprise and give people something that hopefully they haven't seen before, and something weirdly relatable. But it's almost like the narrative was like us looking back from the distant future onto our current present in a weird way, if that makes sense. Like look at us now, how strange things are.
Like how we look at 80s infomercials.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny because the movie that it reminded me of the first time I watched Synergy, I was like, this is like Total Recall.
Yeah.
It really did. It reminded me, and not just Total Recall, but the commercials. You know, you want to live somebody else's life? Then come to Recall. Because that's in many ways what we're doing with our digital lives.
Mm-hmm.
And people are creating other identities for themselves and creating a separate sort of world and life. And I think your film speaks to this, is do we have the emotional capacity to carry that much weight, to carry two or three different lives around?
That's true. That's a really good point. And that's that is where we kind of approach it. That's why the both of the main characters, their goal is to help. They're here sort of to help these people who are in this sort of social media cycle, this mental trap. And one of them, they both think they're doing a good thing, but in a way they're just sort of getting the social media addicts hooked in even further in a way. So,
well, before we came on the air, Travis was talking about the irony of this, in which you guys are commenting on the sort of, the obsessive nature of social media.
Right.
And yet, social media is absolutely huge when it comes to promoting movies like this.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, one of our, after we put it out, you know, our goal was obviously for it to be seen, and doing anything we could to promote it, and kind of realizing how, even with something that we think is such a great idea, how difficult it is to have it seen, and then sort of starting the ironic aspect of, you know, which relates to our film, in that we wanted likes. We wanted for people to share it, and these are what the characters in the movie are selling. Mm-hmm. So it's like we were kind of we constantly were saying, we're living in our film right now.
That's true, because Facebook is very helpful in promoting anything, really, but especially, you know, a film. And you do find yourself like realizing, you know, our film satirizes the whole, you know, obsession with social media, and yet here we are on social media promoting our film, which is what the characters who are seeking the help of the leads in the film, who are helping the likers get more likes.
We also have people comment on several of the posts, you know, like, I don't feel right liking this.
Right. Well, fortunately, you didn't promote it saying, hey, you know, watch this movie because it will fix all of your depressions and problems and insecurities and stuff. Fortunately, you didn't misrepresent things. So, well, let's talk a bit kind of process of the thing, because a lot, we've talked about this with, you know, Kyle C. Mumford a few weeks ago and stuff, is you know, shorts are a huge buzzword and conversation piece in screenwriting right now. A lot of screenwriters who are trying to find agents, representation, studios, producers, are making shorts to show off their scripts and stuff. So, so now you guys came up with the idea. Let's kind of talk about the process of, like, you know, Stacy, were you one primarily that wrote this? Travis, did you give notes? Or because you're an editor, you're like, I'll never give notes to anybody? Or and how did the script come about? And then we'll go into some of the production stuff.
I mean, from my perspective, she wrote it. Mm-hmm. I gave notes, and then there were a few other people that we just sort of bounced the script off of at certain stages. So that's the editor version, and now I'll let the writer explain in further detail.
Yeah, it was just that easy, right, Stacy?
It's all kind of a blur, but I remember, you know, writing a rough draft and then doing, I want to say, like 20 rewrites. I probably have like synergy draft, like 18, 19, 20 in my files. Just lots of tweaks here and there, just going through it with as much of a critical eye as I could to just get the best version possible. And we got feedback from probably 3 or 4 just key people that we trust. And, you know, there are a few little, awesome little suggestions that every person made, some of which did end up in the film, and I'm really grateful for their contributions. So in some respects, it was also a real collaboration. I mean, I see this film, even though I'm the writer of the script, to me, it was a really, really wonderful collaborative experience. You know, the casting of the film was interesting because there's 9 characters in the story, which is a pretty decent amount of people.
Yeah, for sure. Especially, yeah. That's decent for a low-budget feature.
But we ended up casting mostly people that we knew and one that was recommended to us. So, yeah. Did that answer the question? Or did I go off on a tangent?
No, 20 drafts. I don't know what that means, because I usually just write one and then boom, done. Ready to ship. That's it.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Well, the one question that does come to mind, though, based on that is, you know, Travis, as an editor, you know, he's got air dates that he's chasing. You as a journalist and journalistic editor, have deadlines you've faced and deadlines you've enforced. Did you guys give yourselves a deadline here, or were you a little bit more free-form with it? Like, okay, let's just take as long as we want, or were you happy to not have the pressure there? What was it like?
Yeah. We definitely had a deadline. Because we wanted the film to come out sooner rather than later, just because we felt that it was like that topical, that we wanted some of the details that are in the film to still feel relevant to today. Mm.
There were also people, we would see either videos or like articles about things that were somewhat not really similar. They just like maybe touched on an idea, so there was a little bit of where we wanted to get it out, you know, and you know, it was like a new idea.
No, outstanding. So, okay, well, and then the last question about the writing process was, when was the moment when you said, okay, we're ready to shoot? Not necessarily that it's done, because production offers a whole bunch of set of notes. But what was that moment of, like, how did you know you were ready to go shoot?
Probably just kind of giving that final read. And also there was a schedule in mind, because our lead actress, she lives in New York, Khalees Hawkins, who actually is going to be on Oxygen's Funny Girls. It's a new reality show that's coming out April 7th. So we're excited about that. She's one of, like, the five main stars of the show, which is all about female comics. She's a female comedian, and she's based in New York, and she comes out to LA occasionally, and so we had to kind of fit the shoot in a way around her schedule, because then we would have to wait another 2 months. So there was some coordinating where we wanted to make sure she was going to be in town and on set by a certain time, and then our male lead, because they have a scene together, and so it was coordinating their schedules, and that's kind of how we shaped the timeline of the shooting. So we definitely had a deadline in mind, for sure.
Now, did you guys welcome that sort of thing? Because I find that I actually like deadlines. I work a lot better to a deadline than if I don't have one. If I don't have a deadline, I'll just conceptualize something for 2 years before I even write something down. You know,
Absolutely. For me as the writer, it definitely is very critical to have a deadline. I'm used to the magazine environment where deadlines are very important, and I same as you, like, I could write a story forever if I could, you know? I mean, I could just write and rewrite and rewrite at some point, you know. You just have to say, that's it. It's ready. It's good enough, you know. Maybe another rewrite will make it extra, extra good, but maybe not. Maybe it's fine, you know, and just go for it while we're still alive, you know.
No, that's true. And as a story producer in Rattle TV, I've had to pry some cuts from editors from their cold, dead hands. Like, no, dude, we're done. It's out. It's out. No, it's out.
Well, you can always tweak, the post-production part of it, you know. It's just, you know, layers and layers and layers of video and graphics and, you know, and you just, depending on the schedule, you just keep adding to it. We just kept adding more and more layers that we think made it more funny. Mm-hmm. And just little ideas kept popping up and then we had our deadline, and then we had to perfect it, you know, make everything.
Yeah, Travis, let me ask you, because I've had some directors on who've said editing experience has helped them enormously as directors and writers. Did you have that stuff in mind? Like, in other words, when you were reading the script and helping out with your notes, were you actually thinking of, okay, as an editor, I'm going to have to edit this to make it work? Or were you literally just reading it and giving notes as a script reader and somebody and a viewer kind of thing?
As far as the script, we sort of worked out a lot of the visuals together, just off of the script, because I also shot the film. I didn't really put a credit there, but I did the camera work, and you know, I just from doing my own short film years and years ago, and working as a camera guy or lighting guy, you know, I was able to. I know a lot of the very important aspects of making a film, and Stacy was able to work with the director or with the actors. And I was sort of taking the technical side with, you know, an occasional interjection about the performances. So I think that worked out. And
yeah, I think we just had a real balance, you know. Travis understands the technical aspects very well, and I understand more of like the story, because I wrote the stories, and how I saw the characters behaving. And so we knew how the scenes were going to look, like he said. I mean, we had it worked out really well. Every scene was worked out before we started shooting. And then it was just a matter of making sure the actors were performing in the way that we had both envisioned the characters being. And we got really lucky, because everyone pretty much... not even pretty much, but they did. They nailed it. Like, we're just so happy with every single performance. And we have one non-actor. She's a writer. She plays an emo girl, Rena Silverman. She's amazing. But she, like, writes for the New York Times, and she's also been an editor. She kind of has my background in writing. But she was just amazing. We went on instinct and thought she would be great, and she was.
Yeah, I can't say she pops out as like a non-actor. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And just from knowing her, I knew that she could perform, and she had sort of a performer's energy, and she could do that part well.
Every writer is an emo girl underneath it all, let's be honest.
Exactly. Well, she had a lot of lines. She actually had a pretty good amount of words to say and memorize, and she memorized them all very quickly.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with that.
Now, that's a perfect segue into sort of the casting process. I knew, and you guys said you used a lot of people that you knew, but this isn't an exercise of nepotism. I mean, as you mentioned, your leads are established performers and people who know not to bump in the furniture. So tell us a little bit about how the casting worked.
Well, we started with the two leads. I knew that I wanted to get them secured before we really cast anybody else.
And these are people you knew, you've worked with them before, know that.
Well,
social
one
level
of them, the male lead, Bo Sia, I actually know him from New York from many, many, many years ago. He's a slam poet and an actor. He was on HBO's Deaf Poetry Jam for 6 years. And he's won a Tony. He's just an extremely dynamic, interesting performer whose main art has been poetry, slam poetry. But if you go on YouTube and you look up Bo Sia, Deaf Poetry Jam, you'll find videos of him on the show just giving the most awesome poetry performance. It's not even a reading. It's a performance, because he is... And these poems are long, and he has them memorized. So I just knew he was special, and I just saw him as that character, and I approached him. I didn't even audition him. I just really went on my instinct, and he said yes. And then Khalees was recommended to me by a mutual friend, and she read the script, and she just really liked it. She connected with it, and I just thought she would be great in that part. I looked at her performances. She has stand-up stuff online. She's done some acting as well, comedic acting. And I thought she would be great. And then we kind of assembled the rest of the cast in a similar fashion. Greg Barris, the comedian that I mentioned earlier, he was on board from the start, actually. We hadn't picked out the character for him back then, but as the script developed, we knew which character he was going to play, which was going to be an operator.
Like
genius, as we call them, which is sort of like an Apple genius at the Apple store, except they're like geniuses who are able to, like, get on the phone with a customer and really guide them through their social media dilemmas. And so that's really how the casting worked.
You know, in another life, many, many years ago, on another shore, I worked for a company that wrote personal ads for people. Some of my earliest writing. And you're like geniuses, right? Without breaking any confidences or confidentialities, or you're like geniuses aren't that far off in some cases.
Yeah, that's basically, people like that were the inspiration.
We'll throw some of the YouTube links to the Poetry Jam and stuff like that. But something I think people who watch the movie will say is that, oh my God, I know that person. Oh my God, I know that person. I've seen this on Facebook. I've seen this on Twitter, Instagram, etc. Did the cast have a similar reaction? It sounds like some of them did. Like that they really got what you guys were saying and doing.
Yeah, for sure. I think all of them really got it. And it's a universal subject right now. I mean, you would be lying if you said that you didn't care about, you know, how people reacted to, you know, something you post online.
Otherwise, you wouldn't post.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you wouldn't share. That's the whole act. In the act of sharing, you're already sort of making a statement that I care about what other people think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm of the opinion, you know, that we are probably wholly unqualified to deal with the internet. I mean, the internet is, I'm a huge sci-fi buff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
The internet is that supercomputer they're talking about, like in Star Trek. Like 5 centuries from now, they were, you know, the idea was like, you know, in the 1950s, people were imagining supercomputers, you know, like the iPhone that we now have in our pockets. And it's one of those things of the fact that we use it for such silly things like cat videos and mm-hmm. stuff like that, almost as a sign of like, you know, we're not ready. We're not ready for what this technology can do. And the fact that so many people, when they put something online, and I mean, you know, Travis and I work in, you know, well, you too, Stacey. You're not in unscripted, you know, like we are. But like, when you put something, well, you in magazines, you're probably closer to it than we are. When you put something out there, when you publish it, you put something in a magazine, it goes out into the world.
Yeah,
there ain't no taking it back. You can delete that tweet, but if somebody screen grabs it, it's a tattoo.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And I think we're still just beginning to wrap our heads around that.
Yeah, I think that. People are sort of under the illusion that because you can like delete something after you post it, that there isn't the same permanence as something that, you know, gets printed on paper. Yeah. But when in fact that the fact is that all of your words end up somewhere. They're never really deleted, you know. So there is a permanence. There is a permanence to our internet community, our world.
Our emails are never deleted. Every Yahoo email I've ever written is on a Yahoo server somewhere.
As long as those Yahoo servers don't get blown up or...
But they won't because they're backed up, and they're backed up, and they're backed up.
and we learned that from the whole Sony hacking scandal, you know? And that was breaking just as we were finishing post-production for the film, actually. And so we have a little bit, small little homage
to
the scandal in the film, but that just showed you that, you know, be careful what you say in emails to people, even if you think that you're being super, super confidential.
It's in writing.
That was one of my dad's wisest words of advice, was when email first started, and I asked him about something, whether I should reply to some email, and he said, don't do it because it's permanent.
Yeah. Well, it's true. It's absolutely permanent. So anyway, I think your film touches upon that thematically as well. So, but let's talk about the set. So, how long did it take for you guys to shoot? It's kind of hard to tell because there's a lot of cutting and there's a lot of different, it is, you know, it's presented and shown like an infomercial. So tell us kind of a bit about the production schedule and all that kind of thing.
Well, the main day was, we had one main shoot day, which is probably 14 hours or something like that. And it was pretty much almost all in front of a green screen. And then we had one other day here in Los Angeles. And then we had a shoot, two very small shoots in New York.
Oh, wow. So you guys are bi-coastal. Look at this. This is a big, big money.
Production. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's awesome.
So we just had a little, I borrowed a green screen from my friend Bryce in New York, and we just popped Greg in front of the green screen, and I lit him just in the living room right there, and then we shot Rena in the bathroom another day, and it was just kind of picking up little pieces that we needed to get after the main shoot, which was just one full day.
And the main shoot, which was in L.A., the first day where we shot the main, the two leads, and then some of the other supporting characters, that we did right in our living room in our apartment here in L.A. Thankfully, our living room was big enough to accommodate it. And our crew was a good-sized crew for a short like this. But again, it was people that we knew and people that we both had worked with before, who were all amazing, and two of them are actually in the film as as two of the characters. A lot of people kind of did, like, performed several duties, you could say. And we got a free caterer, this place called Green Cafe, which is a vegan cafe here in L.A., who provided the food, and we added their logo at the end of the film. So yeah, that was essentially our filming process.
So your leads are quite charismatic, folks.
Thank you.
Was there room for but at the same time, as Travis described, this is a pretty tight shoot schedule. Was there room for any sort of improv or any sort of line change? Like, did you ever just sort of let them riff and pitch in front of the camera, or was it just sort of like, nope, we got to stick to this clock?
The two leads pretty much stuck to the script, but some of the other performers, for example, an actor, Adam Carden, who plays one of these like addicts, he did some really, really hilarious improv. Just some people, they just naturally improvise when they're performing, and we used those takes, actually, or we might have been, we liked what they did while we weren't recording, and then we just had them redo it. And then Greg Behrs probably did the most improv, because I think that's just the comedian in him. He plays one of the like geniuses, and some of the lines that we used for him, he had actually made up during the shoot that we ended up using, which we thought were just so funny. But I would say probably 85% to 90% of the lines were all from the script.
Now, I think that's a big fear that a lot of writers have, is the idea of you spend all this time writing your script and writing your story, and then you get to set, and the actor comes up with something better. But it sounds like like, oh, why didn't I think of that? And usually the reason is because the writer has to write the whole story, and the actor is concentrated just on their one part. So they'll say, well, why did I say this? And it all makes sense. It's fine. Uh-huh. But it sounds like you were pretty welcoming of that. Or was there ever times you were like, ooh, no, I don't, because this is your first script. This is sort of your first, this is your baby to a degree. Now you're okay with it?
No. I think everyone was really on board with the script, and they liked what was in it. There were just those few moments when they would naturally throw things around. And I think it's actually to our credit that we picked up on some of these little brilliant nuggets that, they would just say, like, either off camera. Most of them would take place off camera. And then we would just be like, hey, that was great. Like, can we use that, And I was happy to use it, because if it's funny, why not? If it's funny and if it makes the film better, it's why not use it? And we did.
So now tell us about Stacey, you're the credited director.
Co-director.
Co-director with her.
Co-director, co-producer.
Yeah, we're equal. We're equal in the directing and the producing on this.
All right. Well, Travis, you better update the IMDb there. But
you know what? It wouldn't let me list two directors.
Oh, that's right.
Yes, I tried, and for some reason, maybe I have to go back and figure it out. But at the time, it seemed like I could only add one.
Shoot him an email. They'll help you out with that. So there you go, IMDb. There's a shout out. They'll help you out if there's a weird problem. I've had some credit problems too, and if you just explain it to them, they'll
okay. Yeah, we'll do fix that.
It. So well, okay. So how was that? But to go, you know, not to plug IMDb all night, but how was the directing process as co-directors, co-producers, etc.?
Well, like we said, we did a lot of the pre-production where we just worked out the shots, the technical aspects, and then on set, Stacy was dealing with the performances, and I was dealing with the technical, the angles, the lighting.
So there was a good division of labor there.
Yeah, exactly, and it really made the process enjoyable. And whenever I felt like, say, there was a performance that was either off, or which there weren't many, but you know, or something that I could make a little suggestion here and there, you know, I tried to do from that, or obviously editorial as an editor, I was trying to cover as many bases as I could for the post part. You know, yeah. Post-production.
Yeah, he's got that editor's eye and the director's eye already built in. Like, he knows what shots would work and, you know, how things should be positioned. But I feel like I definitely have a rapport with actors, and especially actors that I really, like, believe in and I trust. And I really trusted my actors. And so it wasn't hard to convey to them, like, what I saw the character doing, and yeah, we just really like sort of complemented each other's strengths. I would say that was our on-set dynamic.
Because yeah. I imagine a lot of folks listening to this would say, "Oh my God, a husband and wife team directing a movie, even a short that's shooting over the course of 3 or 4 days." You would think fighting like cats and dogs. I think that's sort of the preconceived notion. But what's funny is you guys are the fifth. And actually, technically, well, the fifth husband and wife interview that's dealt with a husband and wife team.
Oh.
And technically sixth, Megan and I are not married. So sixth dealing with a couple who are sort of working together in the industry.
Yeah.
Cool. Why do you think that's sort of successful? I'm of the opinion that I think, not to sound weird about it, but like, you guys can understand what the other person is going through. You know, I worked on an unscripted show about the police, and we dealt with a ton of husband and wife cop teams. Because it's hard to come home to somebody who's like, well, this is what I went through today, and somebody who works maybe in a different industry may be like, well, I don't understand at all.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. I think that it does, in our case, it did help for us to be in a relationship while also making the movie, because filmmaking is can be a complex and an intense experience, and it's nice to have your partner to be able to lean on, and someone whose ideas you trust and whose skills you trust. And I think that it just, we motivated each other, and of course, like any human, we had some disagreements on things, but we were able to find a common ground because we're both passionate about this project. And the goal, we had a common goal of making it great, you know, and we tried to do everything that we can, that we could together to make it great.
So, Travis, does that collaboration go into the editing process when Stacy was giving you notes? And helping you, you know what I mean, and kind of being a producer editing.
Well, it's funny. There's something that a lot of editors don't like, you know, like touching the keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
Where that was just like, that was literally the extent of like my annoyance, and then we just like literally figured that out, and I was just amazed at how much creativity like her writing did not end, you know, after the shooting, or you know, it was just the ideas kept coming through the post-production process, and that actually motivated me a lot to make the graphics better, to, you know, just keep going. And a lot of times with, you know, with finishing a film, there can be, like, fatigue, and there wasn't any of that, just because, I mean, I get more credit to Stacy than to me on that, but yeah, it was just kind of inspirational to work with someone with so much energy and creativity.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Well, that's what we endeavor here on the Express, is bring romantic sweetness to the world. So I'm glad. hey, if we can do it, it's,
the world needs more love.
It does, absolutely.
Well, I mean, I work with a lot of creative people, and you know, I am always amazed at the ideas that people bring into projects. And here's someone who had never produced or directed a film, and that's what sort of like my kind of the biggest impression that I took from it is just she's a natural talent, because like not having like the sort of pre-filming knowledge that say I would have from working on sets for years, you know, that was cool.
Well, I think you can outthink yourself out of some good ideas.
That's true.
And that's almost what I was trying to get at before with my question about the fact that this isn't a very like structured screenplay type movie. This is presented like an infomercial.
Right, exactly.
And it's not, for folks who haven't seen it yet, it's not an infomercial, but you'll see what I mean when you watch it. Again, we're trying to avoid spoilers and stuff.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, go ahead, Stacey.
Oh, I don't know. Was there a question?
No, I thought I was stepping on you, so I want to make sure I didn't cut you off. So, but also to go back to something you said before, Stacey, which was like you kind of wish maybe sometimes you know, maybe had another draft or two, or maybe another pass or two at the script. But it sounds like in the edit process, you may have found a chance to do another draft or another pass.
In a way, yeah. I mean, there was room to add a lot of different stuff because, like Travis said, we filmed so much of it on green screen that we really could play around with like composition of some of the shots. And there is a way to kind of grow the story even more when the film is in the hands of a really skilled editor and graphics person, Travis. And so we wanted to have fun with it and to go as far as we could, see, you know, what's the best version that we can create. And I think that, you know, we definitely did that together.
Yeah, and that's a great thing. We're coming close on time here, and that's kind of a great thought to take us home here for a second, because it, like looking at something like this and looking at what my guest last week, Ramon Hamilton, did with The Hole, you know, for you guys who aren't familiar, the first episode takes place entirely 90% within a prison cell and one guy in solitary confinement. And the number of camera angles, the number of things that they found to do with one person over the course of 10 minutes in a cell was astounding. And that's the thing that you touch upon that yourself with what you're talking about with the green screen and finding within the limitations of, now granted, green screen, you can put anything on it, but even still, you know, if somebody says, you know, because sometimes you hear from people say, and like I said, I've made this mistake myself. I'm not saying this from a high horse. It's like, oh, it's a short film. What can you do? You're so limited on time. You only have so many locations. You only have a small budget. That's all kind of BS. It's about finding what you can do as opposed to worrying about what you can't. I know that sounds so corny as soon as I say it, but it's true. You know what I mean? Like, and I think you guys touch upon that really well. And this is a really good example of like, holy cow, you guys made what looks like a really big budget infomercial. It's a deep of stories that's got theme, that's saying something topical, and you shot it, you wrote it and shot it in a very reasonable period of time. There's no excuse to not make a short.
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what it was. It was just, we wanted to challenge ourselves to, you know, make our first short together and bring it to completion and make it as great as we possibly could make it within our budget limitations. And we used all of our possible resources and just went with our intuition in a lot of things and just tried to make as quality of a product as we could. You know? And
hopefully people laugh.
Yeah.
They will.
Yeah, because, yeah, I mean, that's what I enjoy about the film is that it's funny, but it also has that sort of extra layer, you know, within it.
Yeah, there's kind of an acid humor to it. You know, it's a bit, you know,
some people have called it kind of almost like psychedelic, surreal. And that's the stuff we like, you know, that's the kind of comedy we enjoy personally. So yeah, it was just like, if this is something that would make us laugh, then we accomplished what we set out to do, basically.
Yeah. Our greatest, or at least my greatest compliment was when someone said, you know, that this is like Adult Swim, you know, that, and that made me happy.
It's quite a funny polemic. And it's not often that I get to use that word on the show, so I'm going to get a chance to check out this very funny plumbing. Now, are you guys thinking, what's next for you guys? Are you thinking maybe a feature-length version of this story, or are you thinking more shorts down the line, or what's next for the Stacey and Travis team?
Well, we'd like to take this to festivals. Yeah. I mean, we want this film to have as long of a life as it can, and then jump into other projects. We're, you know, maybe it'll be a spinoff of this. We're not quite sure, but there are definitely a lot of original ideas right now are kind of being grown in our idea factory.
Well, the parts start with her, and you know, she'll come up with a lot of ideas, or I'll text her some ideas, and then we chat it back and forth, but she's a screenwriter, so, you know, it kind of depends on where the inspiration comes from, and that probably will determine what the next project is.
That's right, the screenwriter's in charge. Travis, you just keep that attitude. You're going to go very far.
I know his history.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, listen, so the link is going to be below on the main page, but this goes out on some other feeds and stuff like that, so where can people find this movie if they want to watch it?
Well, they can go to vimeo.com/synergythemovie, all one word, and they will find the full-length film there. We're also on Facebook at Synergy the Movie. So any of those will take them to the film.
Awesome. Perfect. All right. Well, break a leg with it. Keep kicking ass, and let's hope we get some more great movies from you guys. So get back to work.
Thanks, Tim.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us. We had so much fun.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you guys for coming on, and you know, get to making another movie so you can come back for part two.
We will. Definitely will. On it.
And thanks, everybody, for listening, downloading, retweeting. This is Tim Davis on the Handsome Timmy D Express.